Good afternoon, everyone. I hope you all had a good lunch break. My name is Wen Yi, and I'd like to thank you to join us today on this exciting concurrent session as we look to the future of our profession with Caroline Bennett and AJ Pashottam. Before we begin, I'd like to introduce our presenters today. Caroline Bennett is the national leader of Deloitte Actuaries and Consulting Team, the regional leader for the actuarial business and also a member of the global Deloitte Actuarial Executive Team. Caroline has had extensive experience with major life insurers and wealth management organizations, including AIA and NAB. She was also engaged to become the appointed actuary of the NMLA entity. AJ Pashottam is a manager at Deloitte Actuaries and Consultants. Over his 10-plus years of actuarial career, AJ's area of specialty has been in life insurer financial reporting. AJ is a fellow of the UK Institute and Faculty of Actuaries. He has joined the Deloitte Melbourne office in January 2017 from Deloitte AIS in Johannesburg, where he worked for 6 years. Over the past year, he has been managing use cases to highlight new exponential technologies and how these will disrupt the future of work for actuaries. So over the next 40 minutes, we'll hear from our presenters as they open our eyes to the future of our actuarial practice. Please hold your questions till the end, and we will have around 10 minutes for them. Let's welcome Caroline and AJ.
Thank you. So my part will be on introducing the future of work, and Caroline will speak more on how it impacts on the actuarial profession. So I'll be quick with my part. The key takeaways are the demand for actuaries is going to increase, and there's growing opportunities for actuaries under this new future of work landscape. How professionals do work is going to fundamentally change, and this change is going to happen at an exponential pace. The future of work will be fundamentally different from the way it is today, and technical skills and what I prefer to call enduring skills rather than soft skills will still be valuable under this new landscape. So why is change happening now versus 10 years ago? There's 7 disruptors that are driving this change. Technology, they're predicting 6 billion smartphones in the world by 2020. The tsunami of data. So there's going to be 9 times more data created in the last 2 years than in the previous recorded human history. Diversity and generational change. The number of millennials working in an office is going to increase. And looking into the future, the population spread, the size of the population coming from Africa is going to be a huge contributor, as well as people living longer and working for 50-plus years. The change in the nature of career. A career is now, people stay an average 4.5 years at a job, and the half-life of skills is 2.5 to 5 years. So it means by the time you finish university, the skills you learned in your first year is already obsolete. There's an explosion of contingent work. And I guess based on the demographics of the work done in different regions, automation is going to impact China greatly versus the work done in the UK and the US. Also, the price of technology is reducing substantially. So if you sum up all of those changes, it means that this future of work is here and it's now. And how does this future of work impact us? It's impacting us in 3 dimensions, which I'll unpack in the following slides. It's the work that we do. So that's split between work that's done by robots, machine learning, artificial intelligence, and humans. It's who does the work, as in, is it gig workers versus on balance sheet workers or robots? And it's where. How close to your office do you need to be to do work now? So the blue is what your current options are, and the green is what's the future going to look like. As you can see, there's a multitude more options available to businesses going forward. So this is unpacking the what of work. On the bottom left, you have your minimum entry. So it's minimum technological advancement. So that's around data warehousing, data modeling. As you move higher on this graph, you get to a more complex kind of technology. So we're looking at data lakes, visualization, big data, and all the way on the top are the exponential technologies that are really going to drive the future of our industry. That's Internet of Things, blockchain, machine learning, as well as natural language generation and processing. This is speaking to the fact that there's a spectrum of technologies. So when somebody says robotic or cognitive technology, there's a spectrum of how cognitive that technology actually is. You start off the low end, which is RPA, which is basically just imitating a human's keystrokes. So it's not very intelligent at all. The next level above that is intelligent automation, where it's able to make certain decisions. Cognitive automation is where the human and the machine work together to solve a problem. And the futuristic state of cognitive technology is artificial intelligence, which mimics human intelligence. Again, this is just speaking to the different technologies and examples of the different RPAs that are out there. Natural language processing, which takes an unstructured data and can reproduce it and analyze it in any format you want. One part of that is natural language generation, which I've been told is used to produce most of the sports commentary that we get now. So it's all automated, and it's not done by an actual human. Intelligent automation, as I said, is capable of making decisions, so it has some sort of rules built in. Machine learning can learn without intervention from a human, so as you add in more data, it becomes smarter at predicting. And analytics, which can drive things like behavioral sciences and cognitive data stewards. So that's the what. The who is, again, a continuum of options on who will be doing this work in future. And the drivers of change are similar to those that I referenced earlier. So on the left, you have your on-balance sheet talent, which is your normal employees. You then have joint ventures where your employee could be its own company and has a joint venture with the business. Managed services, where you are contracting out to another company. Contractors and freelancers. So freelancers are independent. They are unlike contracting out to a Deloitte, for example. Gig workers would interact with the company via platform. Crowdsourcing, you could crowdsource solutions. So you open up your solutions to the entire globe, basically. And digital labor are robots and artificial intelligence. So again, speaking to that, the landscape for business in future is very different to what it is now. It's an augmented workforce of humans and robots. And your open talent is not just employees, but a number of options. As the world changes, new roles will be created and new skill sets are going to become important. So research done by Deloitte indicates that wages are going to increase primarily for two job types. So the technical roles So skills that are scarce are going to demand a higher wage. And the second is for hybrid roles, which combine what they call hard skills of mathematics, statistics, critical thinking, with more enduring skills of industry expertise. So an example of this is data scientists who, with industry expertise, can demand 150% more pay than one without. So speaking to the same topic, the chart on the left shows jobs which explicitly call out for these enduring skills, such as creativity, teamwork, problem solving, writing and research for a data scientist, showing that these are skills that companies have identified as in demand. So it's not just having the book knowledge and the pure mathematical and statistical skills, it's also having something above that. The third dimension that I want to discuss is the where. So as technology impacts and enables our interactions, where we are situated relative to the work can change. So on the left you have co-located, where you work and you are where you work. And in those examples, the physical workspace will be designed to allow human interactions that are beneficial and maybe spontaneous. As you move further along that axis, you get hybrid workspaces, where people in the offices are able to interact with people virtually. So you can hire staff where perhaps they are located in areas where the skills are more commonly found or where they are cheaper. And on the right, we have virtual workspaces where people from different countries can seamlessly work together. So this is just giving an indication of what the future looks like. On the top right hand there, we have self-driving car, which is predicted to be completed by 2020. At the bottom there, we have Uber, which is planning to release a flying taxi service by 2023. On the right, on the bottom right corner, we have 3D printing, where they are now printing limbs and houses, and they expect 4D printing to come out next, where 4D is something which changes with time; it redesigns itself with time. And on the left there is a Babylon app which can diagnose your health via your mobile phone.
Exponential technologies such as artificial intelligence, cognitive automation and crowdsourcing are disrupting business, upending entire industries and changing the face of work at an ever-increasing rate. These technologies could disrupt your business, or they can be leveraged to take a fresh approach to what you do day to day, driving value, saving time, and reducing costs. They can take away the mundane everyday tasks that often stifle your employees and free them to better add value to your business, help it grow, or spend more time with your stakeholders. In the professional world, leveraging these technologies means enabling your employees to spend more time on what matters. For example, actuaries spend lots of time accessing and preparing data for analysis. Is the data ready for use, complete, and accurate? To automate the process of obtaining and remediating data, to reduce time wrangling data, and increase time driving insights from it, so that most of the analysis can be streamlined and augmented by a cognitive application. The remaining workload is where we can use our time effectively and efficiently. We found that the majority of actuarial memos can be drafted by machine via our cognitive communication platform. We can then spend more time and effort fine-tuning the end product and communicating person to person. And by including a document management solution, access control, versioning and editing is a snap, creating even more time for customer discussions. Increasing the return on your actuarial function by making it more efficient and enhancing your ability to deliver strategic and value-added insights increases the return on your most valuable asset, your people.
So Ajay has taken you through, I guess, some of the background around how we see the future of work more broadly, and now we'll turn to the topic of, I guess, how that really applies in the actuarial world. But firstly, I guess just to have a think about that in terms of the physical premise and what things look like now versus what they might have looked like before and what they might look like in future. Because this is obviously a continual evolution. This is what a factory looks like today, which is clearly very different to what it was not that long ago. This is how, some are better, some are worse, but this is how an office looks like today. But, what will that look like a few years from now? What will be the sort of environment we work in and the tools we have? It changes just so rapidly. So we have been part of a global initiative really looking at this question of how does exponential change impact professions, and in particular the actuarial profession was where we started. And so in framing the question from an actuarial perspective and taking the hypothetical chief actuary from really just about anywhere in the world that we've seen from either client work we've been doing or surveys we've done over time, there is a really high appetite for the topic of actuarial transformation and changes in how we do things. And that arises from a whole series of demands that are only increasing, whether that be the data and systems and processes that our functions are working with, the need for continuously improving quality, as well as at the same time achieving efficiency and cost reduction. And then overlaid on that is obviously continuous regulatory change. And at the moment, clearly, for most parts of the world, IFRS 17 is going to be a very significant driver of change and potentially transformation. And we do see that chief actuaries are looking to move their functions in a more strategic direction. They would love to implement new technologies and in doing that enable them to be a catalyst for change in doing things in a different way perhaps than the past. So these will be very familiar types of issues and challenges. But just to, I guess, replay them before we move on to the potential opportunities, people are still working with, what you might call patchworks of outdated systems, of things that don't necessarily talk to each other, constrained potentially by historical processes and data. We often see actuaries working in what might more purely be considered IT roles, and as we've touched on already, there is the need to be continuously responding to emerging regulations. All of those things do present, however, some very significant opportunities if one is able to move to best practice systems, better integration of systems, freeing up time to focus on the value add, automating and or returning technology tasks to technology, and then being in a position to really proactively work on results and analysis and the ability to be ready for change that continues to come. And that, I guess, is if we look at the little schematic, I guess, on the right, when we've looked historically at actuarial functions and where, I guess, people would like to be versus where they are today, we typically see that a lot more effort is being deployed at the bottom end of the chart in terms of the operational functions around being a steward and an operator of day-to-day activities, and less so focused around the sort of catalyst and strategy dimensions where I think people feel they can add more value but they haven't necessarily had the capacity either personally or across their function. So The technologies that are available, and Ajay talked about a number of those already, are such that we can imagine a world where, and this is a hypothetical morning somewhere in the world, 5 a.m, the automated robot produces the actuarial model results and sends its results off to an analytics engine. 6 a.m., the data from the engine is moved somewhere onto visualization dashboards and they're all ready and updated. 7 a.m., the natural language generator kicks in, takes those results and writes a report. 8 a.m., the chief actuary can open all that up when they get to the office at 8 a.m. and have an initial look. 8:10, the chief actuary's done all that, is in a position to start to interact with the chatbot and to get the results split in a different way. 8:15, you're on to the actual insights generation. Now, it might sound a little over the top right now, but all of those technologies actually exist today and are being used in different applications around the world. And on quite a number of these we have actually now deployed in various parts of our actuarial practice. So these are real, tangible things that actually are possible if one wants to go there. So when we looked at this at the outset, I guess we had to boil it down, and you could say it's oversimplified, but if we had to boil it down, we said, okay, there are broadly three main areas of work that actuaries are involved in. There's sort of an ideation and hypothesisation phase on the left of this chart. There's the computation and distillation, a lot of the crunching of numbers that goes on. And then on the right, we have the so-called application and decision-making. What do we do with that information? And so our hypothesis would say that right now, a lot of effort is being spent in that middle bucket, but it's also that middle bucket where the immediate opportunity for automation is really the highest. And so we would say that what we're going to see, that over time the effort and energy is going to spread out to those right-hand sides where you are able to add more value, but also it does require a different set of skills, and then those enduring skills that AJ was talking about earlier are really the ones that are being tested much more strongly out there on the left and the right, because there is this much higher cognitive and social requirement for those tasks than perhaps for the computation and distillation that takes so much effort today. So, as I said, I guess that middle phase does have a big focus from our perspective around the automation. It starts probably in the modelling, but it also then can spread out into what you're doing around the data at the front end and the production of reporting and analysis out the back end. And there's really an enormous array of places in actuarial process that many of the technologies that we talked about earlier actually can, and in some cases already are, being applied. And it really does then lead to a whole new set of questions around what is the role, I guess, of the professional in that automated process. How do the people with the professional responsibilities in that ecosystem still fulfil their professional responsibilities in that environment? And what does it mean for things like training and so forth of people, whether externally or within an organisation, when many of the tasks that have historically, I guess, formed the training ground are potentially the ones that also get automated very early on in this process. IFRS 17 is clearly a trigger for many people to reconsider their way of doing things. Some may or may not look to use that as a trigger for transformation of their actuarial function. This is just a quick snapshot of, where people in the Australian market have flagged themselves to be at the moment in terms of adopting new technology as part of their IFRS 17 journey. While it it says that some are in a phase of implementing new technology, and a very small proportion are at proof of concept stage. There is still a very large portion of the market here that hasn't yet really gone as far down this path as perhaps in some other markets, where looking for opportunity and really working hard around the application of new ideas and proof of concepts and how can things be done better and different is absolutely a key area of focus that has been getting a lot of energy. So that brings us back, I guess, to the summary points, and very happy, I'll go through these again, but then very happy to have a conversation about different perspectives, I guess, on the threats and opportunities as it relates to the actuarial profession. I guess our position is that the demands on actuaries definitely continue to increase, and that the opportunities for actuaries similarly are increasing as this transformation of business is going on. Our view is also, though, that the way professionals in particular are going to do their work will fundamentally change and will continue to change, as it has done over time, but that this, we see this accelerating absolutely as the technological change accelerates. And all of this is absolutely underpinned by the fact that the future of all work is changing, and that absolutely is an underpin for everything we've looked at. And I think really importantly for actuaries in particular, that the combination of technical skills and enduring skills is going to be the most valuable in future. We obviously had some data points around that today, but I think particularly in the world where the actuarial work is moving to the left and right of the chart that we showed earlier, those people who are able to move to those different sides of the spectrum will certainly be the ones who thrive in this time of change. So that's, I think, time for any questions, disagreement.
Yeah, hi. In the slide a couple ago, you had various stages of organisations being prepared to do different things. It was largely sort of two-thirds not having done anything.
Thinking about it.
Waiting and seeing. And the other third perhaps doing something, but there was actually zero. There wasn't a bucket for anybody who's actually implemented and is using it.
Correct.
Anybody actually done anything? Seen the outcome of it.
So that was an Australian IFRS 17 readiness view. So I think in that context, that is zero. I think elsewhere in the world, we certainly are seeing people go and actually implement a whole range of the things that we touched on earlier in their actuarial processes, whether it be robotic process automation, whether it be use of cognitive tools, whether it be natural language generation, as we touched on earlier, to produce actuarial reports, not only for sports reports, but actually for actuarial reports. So certainly there is quite a lot of activity elsewhere in the world on these topics in actuarial environments.
Okay. I'd be interested in your comments about how you think we should be educating our actuaries for this future world and what additional or different skills they should have.
So this is something we have talked about quite a lot in our global team that's been working on this, not necessarily from a professional education perspective, but also from the perspective of what one would do in a corporate ongoing education perspective. But I think the two are somewhat analogous anyway, because we're all educating the same people ultimately. So I think if you believe our hypothesis of moving to the left and the right of the chart, then it becomes a lot more about being able to ask the right questions and to frame the right questions in a different world, And then to make sure that whatever has been done is answering that question and not some other question. So I think that whole piece is probably how one does that, I guess, is a different question. But yes, that problem solving in a complex environment rather than a what's probably more previously been a analytical problem solving is probably one piece of it. I think the piece around having the the other sort of whether it's social, but the way you do that questioning process and so forth is in itself a whole learning process that other people perhaps have more training in currently than actuarial people. So I think that's definitely another piece of it. Are there any comments on this one?
I'll let you have the microphone back, but while I've got it, sorry, I'll just say that I do agree with your hypothesis from the perspective that if we don't do that, I think as a profession, our influence is going to significantly deteriorate. So that I would like to think that our education, both in corporates and as a profession, is to train people to be able to do the value add and to ask the right questions, because I think that's key to what we can offer.
I think the piece that will be most interesting in the change, which is a slightly different variation again, is the willingness of people to let go of some things, because you can really only free up the capacity in the environment people are working in, which will not change, that there is a cost-constrained environment. Then the only way you can free up capacity to go out there is to actually implement some really fundamental change. And so the willingness of people to let go of what historically has been actuarial roles is going to be really critical to getting to that outcome. And if that doesn't happen, then I think that will be where it gets quite unpleasant, because this stuff will... I mean, the way people will describe it ultimately is, anything that can be automated will be... it's just if you do it to yourself first and get to where you want to be, then you're ahead of it. If it just happens to you, then that's not where you want to be. You can.
Yep. So maybe virtual reality might be an area where we could educate people. So in my employment, I spent 3 years just working on data when I first joined work, and there's only so much you can really gain from that process. If you develop augmented reality or virtual reality kind of programs to teach people these kind of skills, you could do it in a much shorter time frame. So you don't have to do the whole number crunching to actually understand how to analyze these numbers.
Anyone with a count of you? Oh, no? Got another... Hi, Hayden.
Hi. If you think about an average actuarial team and a chief actuary in a corporate and their current relational map in terms of who they interact with inside an organisation, from board, CEO, CFO, product, strategy, sales teams, etc., how do you think that map will change in the future? Which of those stakeholders will they interact more or less with?
So, I mean, if you're in a view of the world where time has been freed up to spend more time answering strategic questions and providing more input on those topics, then I guess you would say hopefully there's more time to spend with the board and the CEO and so forth, and perhaps you need less time with some of the things like the CFO and so forth on the stewardship type pieces, because they become more automated and so forth. So I guess that would be my starting point. More time with product and marketing and so forth, being able to put more energy in those areas because time has been released from elsewhere.
Hi, I'm Mark Schneider. In my experience, and we've been automating processes for 10 years and working with many companies, what works best is to get people onto automating as their primary task. Don't expect people to do their day jobs and then automate those in their spare time. They won't, is the short answer. So if you want to get automation, and I agree completely that it's absolutely necessary in order to keep up with the rest of the world, managers should make sure that they allocate time, preferably full time, and the productivity that you get as a result is enormous. So I think that's a key thing to do. Don't expect people to do it in part-time or in addition to their day job.
No, I think that's right. And there is an investment required to get the sort of payback that people can do by looking at some things differently, but absolutely doing it after dinner, while it might have some gains, will get nowhere near the sort of gains that people perhaps can look at. And I guess historically our observation would be that actuarial functions haven't necessarily been the best at getting the investment that they need to do these things. And I guess that's why for many, IFRS 17 presents an opportunity to get things done, because it is a once in a generation opportunity to get an investment in the parts of the organisation that need it to do some of these things.
Thanks, Caroline and Ajay, for your presentation. I'd like offer a few reflections based on my rapidly increasing level of experience and having lived through a lifetime of seeing technological change, which is only going to increase. First thing is that over my career I've seen this a greater divergence between the technical actuary and the managerial actuary.
I was wondering what word you were going to use.
Which I think when I started my career was not nearly so pronounced as it is now. And I think from your chart, that is going to increase, that there are going to be a significant number of, for want of a better term, boffin actuaries required to be keeping the technology turning over. And then it's going to put greater pressure on the managerial actuaries, because the other thing I've noticed is that the pressure on the managerial actuary pretty much depends upon how much time they have to analyse it. Like if you go back to the 1960s, I use this analogy quite a lot, you know, they did valuations every 5 years based on things in paper, and they had 3 months to analyse and report on the results, whereas these days we produce monthly returns, and you know, and the analyst, if he hasn't got a good story to tell within a couple of days, then you know they're going to be out of a job. And of course that time frame is going to compress more. And, of course, that puts great pressure on your skills and ability to communicate if you've got to prepare meaningful reports in such a short period of time. So that's one aspect of it. I see that the skill levels of both types of actuaries are going to only increase, and that the divergence between them is going to increase. But the other thing is that I would like to observe from it is that I'm a bit sceptical about how this will happen, because it will take a fundamental change in the attitude of employers. Because there seems to be these days a reluctance to spend money, picking up what Mark was saying, on actually developing new technologies. Most of our IT-type expenditure seems to be doing things like IFRS, which really, I mean, you know, you can say from an international managerial sense they add value, but in a practical, you know, administrative sense, they don't really add value. They're just changing the chairs around on the decks. So there's going to have to be a fundamental shift in thinking that says that we're going to have to spend more and more money on IT, and that's going to be at a time when the time taken to develop the new generation of technology is shortening. So we're going to have to be able to persuade our employers to say, take, you know, looking at, say, the average actuary here, to say, to persuade our employers to go send them away for a month to do training on some new level of technology, while at the same time conceding that whereas, you know, 5 years ago that generation of technology might have lasted 5 years, now it's going to be obsolete within 2 years or 1 year or even 6 months. So I think that it's going to pose some interesting questions from a cost and managerial. It's got a fundamental attitude change that's going to have to be there, which, quite frankly, I don't see happening as yet.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I guess it's certainly happening in some aspects of organisations already. So, I mean, you see large financial institutions around the world, not, and this is not an actuarial observation, but a wider observation, investing very large amounts of money in automation of other parts of their operations, where I think, you know, they see perhaps an immediate bigger bang for their buck. But, you know, that is going to spread, I think, ultimately it will spread across these organisations, and it won't be that you still have a fully automated rest of the organisation and a little actuarial function over here that's still doing calculations on bits of paper. I mean, it's just not going to happen. So ultimately, I think the investment will be found, whether, you know, different organisations will prioritise their actuarial capability earlier or later in that part of their prioritising. But I think ultimately we will see these things happen.
So one thing to add, I like that you alluded to that the actuary would be the one who goes off and learns the technology for a month. So we've tested these technologies on ourselves and developed our own POCs, and we found the best teams are actually led by actuaries and with technologists actually doing the work. So I don't think you should make the assumption that the actuary is going to know everything. It's definitely a combination, actually bringing the SME skills, but the technology people, you know, are the masters of that technology and that domain.
So just a bit of a reflection of the actuarial career path today, where you start as an actuarial student, you come in as an actuarial analyst, and then you move your way up the chain, you know, hopefully you become a consultant and chief actuary, say. And if I look at that future state where the actuary can really continue to provide that contribution, it's at those more senior levels. So could potentially, if this was the future, that we might actually see potentially the demise in the actuarial analyst. And so you're left with, if you look at the job market, you only see job ads for actuarial consultants. Is that actually a sustainable view of the world in the future? Because you need to replenish those actuarial consultant resources, and the only way you do that is by getting new blood in. But if that new blood, you know, they're just fresh out of university, they've got the theory, but there isn't a relevant role for them to get into, because if I look at the role they have today, they don't have the level of job experience yet to be able to provide that level of insight and, you know, be able to communicate to the board or whoever. That's why they start off doing the number crunching, the data computation. So if they were replaced by robots, then are we looking at something that actually isn't sustainable?
So, I mean, that question obviously sits at the heart of what's happening to a lot of professions, or being contemplated by a lot of professions, with the debate around how much automation is possible. I think our view would be, yes, you may not have your graduates doing the same things that they've been doing historically, but we would still see absolutely a need to replenish and continue to have less experienced people. It's just that I think they will be doing different jobs. They won't necessarily be doing the years and years that Ajay just referred to of data manipulation, or doing sort of calculations by hand. I sat at lunch with the people who taught me how to do surrender value calculations on paper, which was a blast from the past. You know, those jobs, and that nearly killed me at the time. So, yeah, I wish I didn't have to do it. So, as a graduate in future, I would have been perfectly happy to skip that year and move straight on to the next one. So I think, but there is a lot of thought required as to what those jobs are, and to the question earlier, what skills people need before they get into the workplace so that they can step into those different roles so that they are ready to participate in a different way and do some different things to what they have done. But certainly we wouldn't take a view that it's a complete hollowing out of, I guess, the less experienced roles. It's just that they are going to absolutely have to be reframed. The education systems pre the workforce are going to have to be different, and also the role that employers are going to have to play in training people differently once they start is going to have to be fundamentally different as well. Looks like we've exhausted everyone.
Any more questions or comments?
Yep, sure.
Okay, well, thank you everyone for participating. Can I ask you to participate a little further by taking the short survey on the FSF app for this session? And can we put our hands together and thank AJ and Caroline for this very insightful session.